Support for WOSU comes from listeners. You can give online at WOSU.org. Support for the State House News Bureau stories heard today on 89.7 comes from Medical Mutual, providing more than 1.4 million Ohioans a selection of health insurance plans. More online at medmutual.com/Ohio.
Good morning. I'm Christopher Purdy, delighted to welcome you all to today's edition of All Sides Weekend, where we talk about the arts and culture in Central Ohio. I like to say about this program that as you're sitting and listening to the radio wherever you are and you're wondering, I'd like to go out this weekend or the following weekend, this is the show for you. We have lots going on here in Central Ohio, and I have two terrific people to tell you about what they've been doing. Let me also say that later in this broadcast, I will have a recorded interview with violinist Rachel Barton Pine, who is in Columbus this weekend. She is appearing with the Columbus Symphony tonight and tomorrow at 8 in the Southern Theater in an all-Baroque music program, music by Vivaldi and Handel and more. She is the conductor and soloist, Rachel Barton Pine. We will hear from her later in this broadcast. She'd be here live, but she's in rehearsal. So, that being said, there may be somebody who is more important, more active in the world of dance and the arts in Central Ohio than Sue Porter, but I'd like to know who that person is. Sue Porter is here. She is the executive director of Ballet Met, and she's a dear friend, and it's always a pleasure. Thank you, Sue, for coming in today.
Well, thank you for having me.
Edward Kerrigan is I just said his name wrong, and I've been rehearsing for 20 minutes. Kerrignan, just read what it says, Christopher. Edward Kerrignan is the artistic director of the Short North Stage, and he is making his debut with today's All Sides Weekend. Edward, special welcome to you, and thank you very much.
Thank you. Thrilled to be here.
So we're talking about dance, we're talking about drama, we're talking about music, and several iterations of all three. It's a busy time in Central Ohio. Edward, I'd like to begin with you, since you are new to the program. You are not new to the Short North Stage. When did you begin there?
I was living in New York, and I was directing a show in Boston at the American Repertory Theater, and one of our actors said, why don't we bring this show to Columbus, Ohio? And I had never been here.
No, wait a minute. When you're in Boston out of New York, and someone said to you in the theater, why don't we bring a show to Columbus, Ohio? You did not sit there and go, oh, what a fantastic idea. That's just great. So let's get real. What happened?
Well, we were producing Hedwig and the Angry Inch, and when we got back to New York, Rick Gore and Peter Yockel came to New York to interview us and just kind of talk about the show. We decided it'd be a good idea to bring it here. And then I came back the next season to direct Tommy. And then the next year I came back and I never left. And they offered me a full-time job. And I've been here for three times living in Columbus. And I love it.
Now, you play in the Garden Theater in the Short North.
That's right.
Which was closed for many years. And people might drive by that all the time. If you drive by and you haven't been inside, what are you missing?
It's a beautiful space, really, really neat. It was a 1920s movie house, and it has a very unique vibe to it. I really love directing and choreographing on that stage. It's unlike any other theater in America that I've ever worked in.
How so?
It's very raw. It's not a polished, finished space. It still has a lot of its ancient charm to it. And we also have the green room black box space, which is a very unique space as well to work in that we create immersive theater in. And I love having both of those theaters and being able to use both of them.
What is immersive theater?
So immersive theater is a big new thing in New York that's sort of starting to branch out into the regional theaters as well. Is when you walk into the space, you are in the environment in which the show takes place. So right now we're running a production of Hand to God, which is set in a church basement. So you literally walk through a glass door and you're in the church basement for the entire run of the show.
Are you then breaking down the fourth wall?
We don't. See, that's my thing. I love immersive theater, but I don't necessarily love audience participation because as an audience member, I like to just sit back and watch. So I think immersive theater, at least how I interpret it, means that you experience it all in the environment, but you're not necessarily brought into the story.
People, I remember reading several years ago when the Garden Theater reopened and they first began using it for live stage productions, thinking, oh, this will last a year. I mean, it's going to be too expensive. People aren't going to go. Yeah, they don't know what the space is. And it has very much taken off as a venue and as a company. There's something going on in that building pretty much all the time that you can pay money to see and have a good time. So where are you getting your audiences from and how are you programming?
Well, it's a big thing to build these audiences right now. I was just saying to Sue that I think it's a great town to work in because it still has a developing art scene, whereas a lot of other major cities already have their theaters and their operas and their ballets, and this one's still sort of figuring out. So you have a really cool audience to play to, and we're growing year by year. We're in our sixth season, next year moving on to the seventh season. And, you know, I came in, I think, in their third season to direct Hedwig, and just watching the progression and the audience base grow, especially with this show, Hand of God, we're seeing people we've never seen in the theater
before.
What
is Hand of God? Tell me about that.
Hand of God's a recent Broadway comedy. It's a little bit avant-garde, but it's about a child sock puppet who demonizes a church basement in Cypress, Texas. It's a very, very funny show, but not for the faint of heart.
Maybe not for children.
Either. Not for children. No. Okay, it's definitely rated R.
We have our family shows, and this is not one of them, shall we say?
It is not. But, and it runs through this weekend.
But you've extended it how many times?
Three times. So we have to close it on March 12th because we're opening the Normal Heart next weekend. But we've extended it three times, and we've nearly sold out every single performance, which has been incredible to see.
Speaking of sold-out houses, I've seen a few with Ballet Met. I've seen more than a few with Ballet Met, Sue Porter. Ballet Met is, I won't say has reinvented itself, but my goodness, I mean, in the last 5 or 6 years, there's been an incredible burst of creative and fiscal, I would think, energy going on in that company. Tell me where Ballet Met is now. I know they're downtown, but tell me where they are now in our souls.
Right. Well, I think when we look at where Ballet Met is today, I don't know that any of us could have envisioned even a few years ago that we would be doing as well as we are. It's we brought in our artistic director, Edward Liang, who has really re-energized the entire company. He's brought an aesthetic with him that is amazing. He has helped us think about the art and the quality of the art that's going on the stage. And at the same time, our academy and our education programs are all growing. You know, I don't know that many people know that we have 1,700 students in our academy.
The only reason I do know that is because sometimes when I'm feeling bad, I sometimes go down there and I walk through your lobby. And you can't walk through your lobby because of all the kids and the students. The artistic activity at 2 o'clock on a Tuesday afternoon is incredible.
It is amazing. And all of those kids get to be there and look in the studio and see our professional dancers rehearsing and doing what they're doing. And there's another thing that we've done. Edward has been able, by the programming that we're doing, to bring in dancers from around the world who want to be here. They want to make a life in Columbus, Ohio, and bring their art to the stage, which is amazing. We've got 25 professional dancers. We have another 6 in our Ballet Met 2 company, which is an important part of how we're trying to expand and be able to do things in this community. But it is, Edward keeps educating me that it is the programming that we're doing that is attracting these people to come and be in Columbus. And we also think that's what it is attracting people more into the theater to see what's going on.
People like Edward Liang, your artistic director, and Peggy Dye at the opera, and the people at Pro Music and the Columbus Symphony, and Edward, who come here and they buy homes and they actually move here. They bring that energy. The audience sucks it up, and up, 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 up. So I think that's also part of why I think we're booming in the arts.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I completely agree with that. I've been in this community for a very long time in a different profession than I am now. But to see this and to be part of where we're going, it's amazing. It goes with us being a smart city. It goes with us being a city that is ready to experience and to grow, and we're excited.
Sue Porter is the executive director of Ballet Met. She has been actively involved with the company for a number of years, and I believe you're a legacy. It's in your family.
We have had porters in the ballet for a long time.
Okay.
They are not my blood relatives, but they are the relatives of my heart.
Okay, they are relatives of your heart. I'm fascinated by your trajectory because I know you come from very much of a business background and a professional background. Not that you're not professional now, but it's a different kind of environment, I would think. So how are you feeling doing this now full-time, being an arts administrator, rather than working in the sort of pure corporate world?
So I spent 30 years in a law firm, loved it, a big law firm. But I have to tell you right now, I am the luckiest person in this world. I get to be in a place where art is created every day. I get to go down, and even this morning I was down in the studio watching our professional dancers take class. It is so invigorating to be in an environment where you create art every day. And then to see it go on the stage or go out in our schools or, you know, to watch these young people, this is amazing.
But one thing I do like to say, and I think it's germane to both of you, is that when somebody goes to the Ohio Theater or the Capitol Theater and sees or the Garden Theater and sees one of your performances, you're seeing about a smaller percent of what you guys actually do all day, because you are performing in other spaces and you are performing for different audiences. Can you talk about this kind of community outreach that goes on?
Well, sure. I like to say a couple things that, especially about our dancers. They go in, they warm up for 2 hours, and then they rehearse for 6 hours after that. But then they're out. They're out in the community. We are working in the school system. It's just an amazing thing. And we're also creating videos. We've really seen a huge uptick. We had a video that came out early in the year called Becoming Violet. We've had a reach of over 1 million viewers to that.
It's beautiful too, yeah.
It's absolutely beautiful. And we've gotten national and international attention from that. And every other video we've put out since that has it's gone up about 43% of the people who are watching our videos now. So we have a whole new thing that we have to be, we get to be creative with and be concerned with. But that is, we have to get our art out in the media.
So when you're doing your budgets, you are now, that's becoming a line item, this kind
Absolutely.
Of electronic outreach, if you will.
And in fact, we even revamped our entire marketing department. We now have a manager of digital media as opposed to some of the other things. And that person is a videographer and a photographer, and because we realize we have to market art in a very different way than we did even 3 years ago.
But, Edward, if you could get in with this too as well, I mean, I'm old, so I'm going to say this. I still think nothing beats being there in person.
I agree with that.
I think it's wonderful. I mean, it's wonderful to have, and you must have that video, that technical platform. But in terms of just being present physically in the theater with the actors or the dancers a few feet away from you.
Yeah, it's why live theater has never died, even in the golden age of television that we're in right now. And, you know, I think people really get something out of being in the room with the actors. And as far as our community outreach goes, I mean, we're starting to embark on more of an education program, and we have a new board member that's been developing this with us as well. We work with the Lovewell Theater Project. I don't know if you know anything about that, but we have a lot of students that are starting to join that project, which these kids write and direct their own musical, and then they perform it, and it's like a 3-week process for them. And then also just discussions and talkbacks after shows and making sure that your theatrical experience is fully rounded out. And we've also – one thing that I think is really important, I've started to use a lot of high school and college interns in the shows. So right now we have 4 of them in Spamalot, and they're working with our professional actors from New York. They're working with our professional local actors, and they're really learning the ins and outs of this business before they go away to college and maybe start to study it as a profession.
We're going to take a quick break and come back with Sue Porter, the executive director of Ballet Met, and Edward Carrigan, the artistic director of the Short North Stage. We'll also hear a bit later from violinist Rachel Barton Pine. I'm Christopher Purdy. This is All Sides Weekend. Don't go away. We are back. I'm Christopher Purdy. We are talking on today's All Sides Weekend with Sue Porter, who is the executive director of Ballet Met, and Edward Carrigan, who is the artistic director of the Short North Stage. Sue Porter, Peter Pan was fantastic.
Thank you.
Was Ballet Met's most recent production. There were things about Peter Pan I had no idea of that were just extraordinary. And talk about a crowd pleaser.
Oh, it was to have our dancers be able to fly. That's the first time we've ever done that. And I'm sure Edward knows more about that. But we had an interesting time with it, but it was beautiful to see. And anyone who was there saw that all the audience had wands that lit up at certain parts. And our dancers keep talking about what it was like to look out into the audience and see that at various parts during the show. So it was we had tremendous response.
Edward was on the show a year ago talking about that. I know he was really that there was a lot that went into that production of Peter Pan, a lot of work, but it paid off. It was beautiful, and I congratulate you again. So that was great. That was then, but this is now, March 17th at the Capitol Theater, now called the Davidson Theater downtown in the Rife Center. We have world premieres and Columbus premieres, Art in Motion. I believe that's three dances.
That is correct. This is, for anyone who enjoys dance or anyone who even wants to get to know dance, this is the program they should come to. Peter Pan's amazing. It's a story. It's lovely. But it is these what we call rep programs that show what the dancers can truly do. And it's also what brings the dancers to Columbus.
Right.
They come to dance in these things, and it is this rep that is distinguishing us between different companies. It's three. We call it a collection of short ballets. The first is Fool's Paradise by Christopher Wheeldon. He is now one of the premier choreographers in the world. And we are only the second U.S. company to be able to perform this work. It's absolutely stunning. The music was created by Joby Talbert, and it's The Dying Swan. And Christopher used an old Russian silent film to get his inspiration. And it's about a ballerina who becomes the muse of an artist. And then the artist becomes jealous of her lover, and we can imagine it was not a happy end.
Okay.
So we've got that. Then we go on to 18 plus 1 by Gustavo Ramirez-Sansano. Anybody who remembers Carmen Macchia from last year?
I will never forget Carmen Macchia. That was, I mean, we were all fanning ourselves.
Right.
Yeah,
and this is the work that shows, you know, truly, again, what our dancers can do. Not all of the dancers can even perform it because it's so fast. And it is to mambo music. It's very Latin, and Gustavo is just very motivated by music. Where he grew up in Spain, there was music. There was no dance. There was music. Mm-hmm. And that, I think, feeds his soul. And then we are incredibly lucky due to the generosity of the Columbus Foundation's Performing Arts Prize to be putting on Aravata. And Aravata means child of water. And this dance is going to be done underwater. And the rain will fall down. The stage will be wet. And it lends an incredible additional element to the dance. If you haven't been out on YouTube and all these other things, you know, get a taste of this because you do need to come in the theater to see if it can happen. Now, I will give everybody a hint. We're still trying to figure out how to get the dancers off stage after their bow because apparently they can dance in water, but it's very hard to walk.
Walk well, that's true. You'd have to hold on to something probably and not each other because you'll all go up. Yeah,
right. So yeah. I still haven't seen how that's going to work.
Okay.
We converted one of our studios down at our dance center to be able to have rain and to do it, to have the water while the dancers are rehearsing.
Now, when you say underwater, are they submerged or are they just being rained on?
They are rained on.
Okay. Wow.
But then it accumulates some on the stage. So it's a beautiful, beautiful effect. Edward is choreographing. And this is, he told me the other day, this is the type of program that really makes him feel like an artist because he's creating and it's from his love. And we were incredibly lucky to have one of our dancers, Gabriel Gaffney Smith, choreograph new music for this.
I don't know what that boy can't do. I mean, he's really, I think he's also a photographer.
It works in art. I mean, he just had a show in the Short North, and it's wood art is part of what he's doing. So, he's an amazing artist in many mediums. So.
And what is he, like 23? I mean, you don't want to get annoyed with people like that, but he really is very talented, and his music has been tremendous as well.
So we're very lucky.
So you have three dances in one night in Art in Motion, and again, I always think of these programs as kind of your seasonal centerpiece because it is, as you say, it is pure dance. That's badly put, but it's really, you know, you can almost sit there in the audience and let it be about what you want it to be about because there is no story. It's not a book.
Or the story is very short. And I say that this is the most challenging of dance because the dancers have to go from different types of dance between the pieces. But also, it gives you an experience of what is being done on today's stages and where the art is going. But if you don't care for one, there's also something else coming up. So I think it's great for the person who hasn't been to the ballet before to come and see this. But this is where you truly see how exquisite dance can be.
It's beautiful when they have the tutus and they dance on point, but that's part of the story of what ballet is. That's only part of it. And that tends to be the stereotype. That's the part we all know. And really, if you want to be shaken up a little bit, I think this would be a great show. Again, it's March 17th to the 25th. It's now called the Davidson Theater. Who's Davidson?
So Joanne Davidson was the Speaker of the House. Just an amazing leader in our community for many years. And I think it was a tremendous honor to her and what she did for our state.
So that is, we used to know that as the Capitol Theater. It's in the Rife Center. And that's one of Ballet Met's homes. You're kind of all over the city. You're in the Ohio Theater and you're everywhere else. So then, Edward, now you're in a production right now. You're trying to close this show. You can't seem to be able to because people keep wanting to buy tickets. It's Hand to God.
Yes.
That's right.
It's been very, very successful. It's been a whole lot of fun to watch people and listen to people laugh at this show. It's gone over very, very well. And every time we extend a week, the tickets go very quick. There are still a few for this weekend, but even those are going away in the last weekend. So it's been very nice to see.
So get down there now for that.
Absolutely.
Now you have a reading of The Normal Heart by Larry Kramer, which I believe was the first really high-profile piece of drama on the AIDS crisis. It was written over 30 years ago, and it took about 30 years to get into to be made into a movie for television.
Right.
But it was that's coming up, and Spamalot. So give us previews of these two productions coming up.
Absolutely. So next weekend, the 16th through the 19th, we're producing a staged reading of The Normal Heart. This is very exciting. We're doing it on the 30th anniversary of the FDA approval of AZT, which was one of the breakthrough drugs in the fight against AIDS and HIV. When we sat down with the artistic committee and decided how we wanted to commemorate that, we decided that The Normal Heart was the perfect show to do so. And also, you know, we focused last year on African-American audience with our August Wilson Festival, which was very popular, very successful. And this year we're sort of looking at the gay rights movement. So we're producing Angels in America, both parts of that, at the end of the year, and that will start in June.
That's a Wagnerian undertaking.
Oh,
that's
it's
incredible.
Huge.
Yes.
And we're also collaborating with the Zoot Puppet Theater in Dayton, Ohio, so that half the cast will be human and all the fantasy characters will be played by puppets of all different sorts. And just watching the progression of those getting built, some of them are gigantic and fill the stage. It's very neat. Next up on our main stage season, we're doing Monty Python's Spamalot. It's a huge production. We have a cast of almost 20 actors, a lot of them in from New York City. A lot of them are local. And like I said, many interns. It's a big dance show, which I love. I was telling Sue I grew up as a ballet dancer.
Did you really?
Yeah.
Oh.
So, you know, I've been a director choreographer for many years. But I love shows like this because it sort of hits on every single style of dance. And it's really fun. I, you know, obviously too young to have grown up with Monty Python, Flying Circus and all that.
But that's so cute. I have the original DVD.
But in a way, I did. My father was obsessed with Monty Python, so it was really important to him that me and my sisters watch all of those films. So I, in a way, grew up with it as well. So I love – I've worked on the show before, but we've decided to put a new twist on it. It's usually done exactly the same way, and we're kind of finding new things, new jokes, a new way to present it.
Which Monty Python film was this based on? Is it The Creation of the World?
No, this is the Monty Python, The Holy Grail.
And the Holy Grail.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. Oh, I can see your house from up here, Peter. Yes.
Oh, absolutely. Yes. So it's a very, very funny show. Again, two comedies in a row with that Normal Heart drama in between.
Where are you getting your actors from? And do you have a standing company, a repertory company there that you use, or are you recasting every show?
We cast different actors for every single show. We try to be as diverse as possible. We always hold local auditions to make sure we find as many local people as we can. And then the ones that we can't, we go to New York City. Or I use people that I've worked with at other theater companies across America.
What are you finding locally about the acting community?
It's amazing. It's
people who live here.
Yes. I've never, you know, I've directed in a lot of different states. And I've never, ever seen a community that has so many professional actors. You know, they may have day jobs, but they are professional actors or New York transplants. We have a ton of those who are like, you know, like me, who left New York, moved to Columbus, and now want to perform still. And so we're very, very lucky between Columbus and Dayton and Cincinnati to have a really rich talent base. So we only have a couple of out-of-towners for every single show, but I think that's nice to kind of mix mm-hmm. the two worlds together. I also have a real connection with the Shenandoah Music Theater and the Shenandoah University in Virginia. I used to work for them a lot, so I have a lot of those students that will graduate and we'll bring them in to be in dancers in the ensemble.
And talk about the puppet theater you were talking about earlier that you're collaborating with.
Oh, Zoot Puppet
Theater.
Zoot Puppet
Theater. Yes. Talk about that, yes.
So actually the guy who brought me to Columbus, J.J. Parkey, is co-directing Angels in America with me. He's also playing Pryor, so we're sort of tag-teaming the production. But this is his idea. He came to me years ago and said, I would love to do both parts of Angels in America, but I know this puppet theater in Dayton, and they would do an amazing job at creating a whole new world for the show.
Had it been done this way before?
It has never been done. I just recently found out that now I think the London production has decided to use some puppets in there.
They're copying.
That's all J.J. Parkey's idea first. But anyway, it's very neat. We keep going to visit them and see the creations that they're making. There's going to be over 20 puppets on our stage, from marionettes to giant puppets controlled by 8 actors. And then our acting company for that show is just incredible.
Angels in America was really a breakthrough piece of theater. I think it's about 20 or 25 years ago since I think I saw that one too when it was brand new, which is central to the AIDS crisis, but it also incorporates Ethel and Julius Rosenberg and Roy Cohn, and
exactly.
there's literally an angel, and there's a Mormon gentleman who comes in who finds himself in the New York City maelstrom, and really it's like Tony Kushner, the author, put everything in the kitchen sink and said go, but it all works.
It does.
It's incredibly complex. How do you direct something like that?
Well, we do a lot of dramaturgy work. We do a lot of research. JJ and I are doing the old George and Ira Gershwin thing where we're locking ourselves in a house for 2 weeks to prep for this rehearsal process so that we can, because there's a lot of moving parts to it. Incorporating puppets into it is going to be incredibly difficult with only 8 human puppeteers that are also your cast. So it's a very complex project, but we're going to do 2 weeks of part one, 2 weeks of part two, and then a 5th week of both shows in repertory. So that will run the entire month of June through Gay Pride, and I think it'll just be a transformative experience. Very different from anything that we've done before.
And in the midst of it, you have Spamalot, which is funny and outrageous and delightful and probably
exactly.
hard to do. It's a big show.
It's a very – there's 10 giant dance numbers. There's a million scenes. And, you know, a show like that everyone knows the
right.
jokes, you have to find a way to approach them so that it's still funny and that it still, you know, is new and interesting. We're very passionate at Short North Stage about not doing the Broadway production but doing something new with everything that we present.
Edward Carrigan is the artistic director of the Short North Stage, and I'm delighted that he's here today on this edition of All Sides Weekend. I'm Christopher Purdy with Sue Porter, the executive director of Ballet Met. And Sue Porter, you have Art in Motion, which is 3 dances in one night, 3 ballets in one night by Ballet Met. Choreography, Christopher Wheeldon, Gustavo Ramirez-Sansano, and our own Edward Liang, who is your artistic director. Among the composers, our own Gabriel Gaffney-Smith, who is a Ballet Met dancer and every man, every person, March 17th to the 25th. Great for the people who have never been to the ballet, I think.
I think it's an amazing
really
opportunity.
I mean, if you have that ballet stereotype, and a lot of it's beautiful, but if you really haven't seen ballet unless you've seen this, and I have to just say we're kind of radio deprived here, but it's a beautiful looking company. It's eye candy. I'm sorry, but I'm trying to sell tickets here for you. Okay.
So, well, I appreciate that,
yes,
and I'm glad you're saying it.
Yes, I'm saying it, but it's a beautiful looking company and very theatrical and always enthralling. But now, after that, Sue Porter, in April, you have Romeo and Juliet coming back.
We do. This is a production that Edward also choreographed, and we are very excited to announce that we're going to have live music by the Columbus Symphony Orchestra. This is a special treat for us. It is not something we can do very often, and it's going to be absolutely beautiful.
It's Prokofiev's score, right?
It is Prokofiev.
Yeah.
And we have the sets and costumes are just beautiful. So that will also be a tremendous experience to close our season. And then we're getting ready for our 40th anniversary next year. It's hard to believe.
That is hard to believe.
It's
my goodness.
Hard to believe that we will have been in this community at that length of time. So we are very, very lucky. And we have some spectacular programs that are going to be on next year.
So you've already done Peter Pan. You have Art in Motion. You were certainly a big part of Twisted 2, which was last fall in the Ohio Theater, which was the collaboration with the opera, the symphony, and the ballet.
And Christopher Purdy. Thank you very much.
I sat there and scratched my nose for part of it. But nobody was looking at me dancing, trust me. But that was great, though, because a lot of people came to that and they left saying the same thing. I had no idea. People were saying, I had no idea that this kind of talent lived here. And that was one point that I made every night. I said, I want you to realize as you watch and listen that 98% of the people on the stage, you know, their kids go to school here, they teach here, they work here, they live here.
Well, they do, and we're lucky. I mean, the arts add to a community. It's one of the things we need to keep talking about in this community is what they do. And it helps feed our soul. And if we want to progress as a community, we've got to support the arts, and it's up to all of us. And there's amazing things to see.
Hold that thought. I want to come back and ask you more about that in just a moment. We're going to take a quick break. Back in about 90 seconds. Don't go away. This is All Sides Weekend on 89.7 NPR News. We are back with Edward Carignan, who is the artistic director of the Short North Stage, and Sue Porter, the executive director of Ballet Met. And I just want to review one more time. If people come to the Garden Theater this weekend, they can see what?
They can see the comedy Hand to God that's running through this Sunday, and then next weekend.
That's not a family show.
It's not a family show.
It's a lot of fun.
It's very, very funny, but it's definitely not for the kids.
And then after that, you have the Normal Heart.
Next weekend, we're doing the reading of Normal Heart, and then the weekend after, we open Monty Python's Spamalot. So a lot coming up.
So a lot coming up. Okay, so that's a busy time. So get your dance cards filled. And Sue Porter, Ballet Met, is at the Davidson, formerly the Capitol Theater, for
Art in Motion, a collection of three short ballets that will show the best that dance can offer here in our community.
And following that, later in the season, you have Romeo and Juliet.
Yes, with live music.
Is that at the Ohio Theater?
It is at the Ohio.
With the Columbus Symphony Orchestra as
yes.
well. Wonderful collaboration there. So I hope you're all writing this down. We're going to be on the web, and you can hear this show in perpetuity in case you missed anything. You can check it out later on our website, wosu.org/allsides. I want to I think it's important to say whenever we do a program like this that the arts are an important reason the arts are thriving in this community is from the Greater Columbus Arts Council, GCAC, and the Ohio Arts Council, and their smarts and their generosity and their real commitment to quality of life in the state of Ohio and in the city of Columbus. There always is talk about a lessening of the support of the NEA, the National Endowment for the Arts. I mean, I think that goes with any political rhetoric. It's always out there. Just give me an idea of what the National Endowment means to people like you who are in the business of producing art.
Well, I know for the ballet, we have been very fortunate to have had a number, almost a yearly grant from the NEA to assist us in putting on a particular production. So very important this year. I believe it's for Romeo and Juliet. It will help us bring it to stage. It is so important for people to remember that, you know, we talked earlier in the show about Peter Pan and great ticket sales. There is absolutely no way we can sell enough tickets to be able to pay for what is on the stage, what people are seeing. Funding is from outside sources is incredibly important. And we are very lucky to have funding by both the Ohio Arts Council and GCAC and so many incredible donors within this community. We could not do what we do without it. And if we lose the funding from the NEA that helps in certain things, it might mean we can't do the quality of productions that we have become used to doing, which I think is not a good thing for our community.
That benefits no one. Really, if that happens, that benefits no one.
No.
That's just I'm throwing that out there for whatever it's worth. How about you, Edward? How about the Short North
Stage? We're in the same boat. I mean, the GCAC and the Ohio Arts Council have been incredibly generous to us. We simply couldn't do what we do without their support. And what's important to remember about this is that Columbus is a developing arts scene, but one thing that I think can happen is that we can become an arts capital, nationally recognized. We can have Ballet Met and Short North Stage and the Symphony and everything be recognized on a much wider scale. And that can only happen if we have continue to have the funding.
How would that benefit people who live in Columbus? If that, I mean, I'm playing devil's advocate here, but if that were, and it is happening. I mean, yeah. Columbus arts organizations are garnering national and now international reputations. The quality of people coming to perform here wouldn't do it if they weren't that kind of payback for them. But what is the benefit to people who live in Columbus?
Besides the bragging rights, I'd say first and foremost, arts tourism. You know, becoming a destination city to see the arts, to see multiple productions in one visit. That's going to be very important for the future of this town as a, or the city as a, as an arts capital.
Sue Porter, looking at, but you've been involved with Ballet Met, I know on the board for many, many years, and now you're running it with Edward Liang. What would you like to see the future be? What do you think is viable? What do you think is realistic? For Ballet Met.
For Ballet, well, I of course think the sky's the limit.
Right. Good.
But
me too.
We have so much potential, and we have opportunities. I think we will move into some touring in the future. I think that just bringing the artists in and having both the artists who want to live here, choreographers who want to come and work with our company, and the dancers. I just think that we have an incredible place to go. It's, again, I keep saying the sky's the limit. We have all of this talent, and we can do it here in Columbus.
The company, Ballet Met, you said, is on the way to celebrating a 40th anniversary. What has the trajectory of the company been in your experience? I know you haven't been involved for 40 years, but I'm just saying,
no.
I don't mean to suggest, even I've not been involved for 40 years, and I'm the oldest person in the room. But I'm just saying,
So we've had five artistic directors.
Right.
Each of these artistic directors, along with, I think, the staff, we can't forget that, you know, the director can set a mission, but we have to have the artist who can perform and the staff who can get it on the stage and those of us who are out trying to raise the money to make sure that we can do these types of works. But each one has moved us to another level. And that's been exciting to see. I've been through now three artistic directors. We do have still people on the board who were there when it was founded.
Really?
Just a few.
So you have some institutional memory. That's great.
We do, and it's very special to hear. And we're going to be talking a lot more about that during our 40th anniversary.
Let's do a show on it. Yeah, that would be wonderful. Let's talk about
it's
that.
It's very special to have those people who've been committed for that length of time and have built an organization that started really as a small academy into a multi-million dollar operation and one that is now receiving, as I say, the works that we're having, Edward's Murmuration from last year was noted by Dance Magazine as being one of the 10 best performances anywhere in the country.
I should also add that Edward Liang, our artistic director, works all over the world. I mean, he was in Vienna. He was just, you know, his Facebook feed is like a Baedeker. I mean,
right.
It's wonderful. Yeah.
Right. In the fall, we did Murmurations, and then 10 days later, it was on the stage of the Vienna Opera, which is a tremendous company. This summer, he'll be in Asia again choreographing. I mean, just it's tremendous and brings our name and Columbus's name throughout the world.
But he comes home to you, you know?
He
comes home to Ballet Met. Again, March 17th, St. Patrick's Day. Great night to celebrate, but it runs through the 25th at the Davidson Theater. You used to know it as the Capitol Theater in the Rife Center. Art in Motion with Ballet Met. Three dances in one night. If you're somebody who really wants to experience something different than what you might think ballet is, this is your show. Then come back in April and see Romeo and Juliet and fall in love and get your heart broken and hear the Columbus Symphony live play Prokofiev's music as well. And we have at the Short North Stage. Now, tell me what you would like to see happen, Edward, at the Short North Stage. I know you're very busy with lots of great stuff. It's hard to get tickets to a lot of your shows, and that's a good problem to have. And you have all kind of extended runs, but now you're the artistic director. You're the one who's setting the tone. You're the face of the company. What would you like to see happen? What's realistic and what's going on?
Well, I think what's really exciting about Columbus and what drew me here from New York was the fact that this community, this audience base here, they expect to see something new and different. You know, and most of the Midwest theaters I work for, I have to do, you know, Oklahoma Carousel for every season. And here,
not that we don't love
I love those shows, but I think we would do, you know, Carousel on the Moon or something crazy, you know. So what I'm very passionate about is revisiting classic work, revisiting, you know, Broadway productions that people may have seen on tour or saw in New York, and then trying to find something new in the material. So last year we did The Fantastics, and it was set in the Dust Bowl. We had a guest director who did a very interesting production of that, and it sold out for 4 weeks. So, I mean, that is an incredible thing to experience an audience that wants to see work like that. So that's definitely a part of our future. We haven't announced our next season. We know next year we'll be doing Dreamgirls and Hair. And we'll definitely
Hair.
And Hair.
Now, so, that original I didn't see. I think I was 12 and we weren't allowed to see Hair. We weren't allowed to see that. I think probably today I'd be allowed to see it. But that's still a great score. That's wonderful
fantastic.
Score. Yeah.
And again, we're going to find ways, you know, most people have seen those shows. We're going to find ways to see them in a new light. And then we're also bringing a lot of new edgy things that are coming right off Broadway so that the Columbus audience can experience it, shows that may not tour through here, that they may not get the opportunity to see in New York, and then make sure that the Columbus audience gets to see them. And that's what Hand of God has been for us, you know, a very successful comedy that was just on Broadway last year, is not going to tour. So there may not be another opportunity to see it. And I think that's what's really neat.
Edward Carrington is the artistic director of the Short North Stage. This is his first appearance on All Sides Weekend. It will not be his last. There's so much great stuff going on at the Short North Stage. Check it out. Don't just drive by the Garden Theater on High Street. Just go inside and check it out. Sue Porter is the executive director of Ballet Met. He's responsible for everything beautiful and dramatic that goes on the stages in Central Ohio. And boy, is she doing a great job. Thank you very much, Sue Porter. We are going to take a little pause here, and I want to introduce Rachel Barton Pine, who is a violinist. She is performing tonight and tomorrow night in the Southern Theater with the Columbus Symphony in a program of Baroque music. Rachel was based in Chicago. She began playing professionally when she was 3 years old, and then by 5 years old, she was making her first recording. She is now a very much established young woman. She is at home with heavy metal. She had her own band for a number of years, and she plays Vivaldi and Handel like a dream. Here is my conversation taped yesterday by phone during a rehearsal with Rachel Barton Pine. Rachel Barton Pine is the soloist and conductor of this weekend's concerts of the Columbus Symphony in the Southern Theater in a program of Baroque music, and she is taking a few moments out of a busy rehearsal schedule to visit with us today. Rachel Barton Pine, first things first, how's the baby?
Oh, thank you for asking. Well, she's now 5.5 years old and has been playing violin for 3 years. And given a couple of recitals, so it's really very fun. It's a dream come true to be able to do duets with her.
When you were last here, she was an infant, so I'll be delighted. Am I going to see her this weekend, or is she staying home practicing?
Oh, no, I mean, I'm the one that practices with her, so she comes to all of my concerts and all of my post-concert receptions, and, you know, she really lives the life. It's super fun. She gets to travel around and see the world.
Now, this weekend, you're playing an instrument that might be new to a few people called the viola d'amore, or the viola of love, if you will. Can you tell us a bit about this instrument?
Yes, but you know what, Christopher? Before I do that, I want to just clarify one quick thing, which is that I guess I'm listed as conductor because there isn't a conductor with this program, but I will be neither wielding a baton nor waving my hands. I'll be either leading the orchestra from the soloist position for the concerti or from the concertmaster position for the orchestral pieces. So I'm delighted to be doing that. But that indeed is how things would have been done in the Baroque. And for two of the concerti, they'll be by Vivaldi for one of the cousins of the violin, the 14-string viola d'amore, which has 7 playing strings tuned in a chord, whatever the chord is of the key of the piece, and then an equal number of resonating strings tuned to the same pitches. So it has a really unique silvery voice that Mozart's father described as a special kind of violin that sounds especially lovely in the stillness of the evening.
So when you look at this instrument, you're seeing one group of strings basically on top of another, and the bottom layer, obviously, you don't actually play. Is that accurate?
That's right. And, of course, that means you have 14 pegs. So the neck of the instrument, or I should say the peg box that it extends from the neck, well, it goes on and on and on and on, making it quite long, though not as long as the neck of the theorbo you'll see on stage. And half of its repertoire comes from the 20th and 21st centuries. It didn't completely die out during the Romantic era after its heyday in the classical period, but then it definitely came back in the 20th century in a big way, thanks to the efforts of guys like Hindemith and Cassata Seuss, and you know, even Puccini and Janáček have written for it. And it's not exactly common, but it's not exactly obscure either. It's just kind of something that is floating around. And the thing about it is it takes a lot of dedication to play it, because you've got almost twice as many strings as a violin, and they're tuned to different notes for each piece, and so it's a real brain twister to just practice it. I remember when I got up and running 7 years ago, it took me about 3 months to master a simple scale. It was a very humbling experience, but totally worth it.
These concerts are Friday and Saturday night, or tonight as we record, as we speak, and tomorrow night in the Southern Theater at 8 o'clock. Music by Vivaldi, Handel, Locatelli, Pisandel, Bieber. And I have to ask you about your foundation and what's going on with your foundation.
Oh, thank you. Yes, so things are going along as always with our young artist programs, the Instrument Loan Program. Since I last was here in Columbus, we've received an amazing gift to our permanent collection of a real live Antonio Stradivari, a 1737 violin. So that was a real coup from a longtime owner of the instrument who had been a violinist himself and was about to pass on and decided to gift the instrument to us. So that was a really awesome addition. But actually, the concertmaster of the Columbus Symphony for this weekend, Joanna Frankel, was a longtime RBP Foundation recipient. She played a viol from our collection for many years as she was a young artist getting her career going.
She's greatly loved here. She's greatly admired here, by the way.
I'm happy to hear that. Yeah,
so you're making instruments available to young musicians. Is that part of the foundation? What else is going on?
Yeah, so we have our financial assistance program, which helps young artists with costs that scholarships don't cover. You might have 100% tuition-free scholarship, but what are you going to do about purchasing sheet music for the pieces you're supposed to study, or getting new strings for your instrument, concert clothes, paying your piano accompanist to come to your lessons or to play for your auditions? And speaking of auditions, what about recording sessions and airfare to take those auditions or participate in competitions, photo shoots? There are so many costs for education and getting your career going in the early stages that artists have to pay out of pocket, which can be extremely prohibitive for certain families. Even the gas tolls and parking to drive to take their lessons can be beyond what their family budget can support.
It's the stuff you have to have, but you don't always think of when you're doing your budgeting. So that's terrific. You also, you live in so many wonderful worlds in music. I mean, you function as your recordings of Bach and Vivaldi and Handel. You do all the big concerti, and you have a fondness, I understand, for heavy metal as well.
Yes, indeed. Well, I had my own band for about 5 years, but we did a very unmetal thing. We didn't break up. We politely shook hands and called it a day because my daughter needed more of my time each day in terms of her practice sessions, and our one guitarist moved to Texas, and we could have replaced him as an instrumentalist, but not as easily as a songwriting voice, which would have really changed the DNA of the band. And then our bass player's other band was really catching on and doing a lot of touring in Europe, and it just seemed like it was time to end on a good note, no pun intended. And just, I miss it, but it was a fun 5-year run, and you know, who knows, I might get back to it. But the
Rachel Barton Pine, a violinist and viola d'amorist, playing tonight and tomorrow night in the Southern Theater with the Columbus Symphony at 8 o'clock. I'm Christopher Purdy. I thank you for joining me for today's edition of All Sides Weekend. I thank as well Sue Porter, the executive director of Ballet Met. Art in Motion opens March 17th at the Capitol Theater, now the Davidson Theater, and Edward Kerrigan, the artistic director, Kerrignan, the artistic director of the Short North Stage, opening Spamalot next week. The All Sides staff includes producer Michael DeBonis. Thank you, assistant producer Shyla Knott. The All Sides interns are Sarah Stacey, Kyle McKinnon, and Emily Sink. Video production by Rich Blue and Amber Blue. Alan DeCenzo is the composer of the theme music. WOSU News and Public Affairs Director Mike Thompson. You can follow me, Christopher Purdy, on Twitter at CMH Music. Thank you all. Good afternoon.